It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We are here along Alabama Highway 51, south of Opelika, where 51 meets Lee County Road 42. This is where that tornado touched down, one of several spots where all that we see now is twisted trees and destroyed homes, leaving behind a path of death and destruction.
Trees snapped in two, buildings crushed. Emergency crews rushing to help those in need. Families waiting to see if their loved ones were okay. That's the aftermath of what appears to be a powerful tornado that tore through Lee County.
The storm appears to have at least a quarter mile wide, probably more. We'll know more tomorrow, of course. And we're talking several miles that it traveled on the ground. The damage is significant. I would put it into a category of catastrophic.
That's Lee County Sheriff Jay Jones describing the path of the tornado. Due to down power lines and debris, authorities would not let us get any closer to the destruction that left so many dead and dozens wounded. Jones says the onset of darkness has slowed authorities' search and rescue efforts, but they still have much work to do.
It's a very hazardous area. At this point, though, our priority is, of course, attempting to do everything we can to make sure that we're getting the area searched adequately and locating anybody else that may be trapped.
And hoping and praying the death toll doesn't continue to rise. Reporting from Lee County, Jeff Sanders, Alabama News Network.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you on this morning. I want to start with that because anytime there's loss of life, that sort of preempts all the political considerations we may be talking about this morning. At least 23 people killed, and as I understand it, adults and children. More than 10,000 homes and businesses, and temperatures tonight are expected to fall before freezing. And so, you know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. The people of God down there in Alabama and surrounding areas are going to help, aren't they? And aren't you? Many of you are probably close to that, or at least experienced some of those tornadoes, because it didn't just hit Lee County, Alabama. I think it went through some areas of the Panhandle and Georgia also. So anyway, our hearts go out to these people that have lost their loved ones. And I always think, you know, when we see something like this happen, if there is anything good about it, and there inevitably is, because God always never wastes tragedy, I think we see the power of God. I'm not saying by that God, you know, pushed a button and caused a tornado to hit Lee County. That's really not what I'm saying at all. But the forces of nature, which God designed and created, a tornado is a very tiny, tiny, tiny example of the awesome power of God. And if anything stops and gets our attention, it's probably these natural disasters that just leave us silent. The fires, the earthquakes, the floods, the tornadoes, the hurricanes, you know, what is man? You know, the psalmist said, what is man that thou art mindful of him? We are really tiny, incapable. And so certainly when the environmentalists start to tell us that we are, you know, responsible for the weather and for the changes in weather, it is laughable. We have no power to stop it or to bring it on. We have none, zero, zip, zed, nada. We have no power. We are just tiny little ants who come and go for a very brief period on this earth. We do not have that kind of power. And so if nothing else, it's time to just bow our heads to the sovereignty of an almighty, all-powerful God who put these forces in place and will one day return. He's the one that causes the earth to turn on its axis and created the sun, moon, and stars and all of the intricate systems. And so he is worthy to be praised. He is an awesome God, and that means awesome in the sense that we fear his power. You know, I was just reading in Hebrews a few days ago about God's incredible power and how we are not called to worship something that has nothing about it that we should fear. No, when people saw God or heard or were in His presence in the Old Testament, they couldn't bear it. They could not bear it. They could not look upon Him. They can't stand to be in His presence because He is so overwhelming in His holiness. And so we serve an awesome God and we bow to His sovereignty. And meanwhile, we roll up our sleeves and do what we can to help those people that are suffering this morning and ask God fervently to do what He always does and use these tragedies to draw men to Himself in an eternal relationship so that these kinds of tragedies here on earth will not be, will be things that we take in our stride. I know that sounds odd, but it isn't. I'll never forget the Willis family because they lost 6 of their 9 children in a horrible accident on a freeway going up to Wisconsin. And I had the privilege of interviewing Scott and Jan right after that accident. And Scott, while the children were in the van, engulfed by the flames, Scott took Jan by the shoulders and he said, Jan, it's for this moment that God has prepared us. I know it doesn't even sound reasonable, but that is the kind of thing that God enables people to endure. It doesn't make sense. It's because we have a different perspective, and that's what we would pray for all those people in Alabama who've been caught up in that, that they will bow their knee to a sovereign God and prepare themselves for whatever the future holds. All right, well, let's go back to mere mundane, earthly kinds of stuff, because I was at CPAC, as you all know, this past week. It was very interesting. It always is. I enjoy it very much for a number of reasons. The president took the stage on Saturday afternoon and spoke for 2 hours to a rousing applause, and perhaps this will give you an idea why. Let's listen.
You know I'm totally off script right now, and this is how I got elected, by being off script. And if we don't go off script, our country's in big trouble, folks, because we have to get it back. And when I look at what's happening on the other side, I encourage it. I say, I think the new Green Deal, or whatever they call it, the Green New Deal, right? Green New Deal. I encourage it. I think it's really something that they should promote. No planes, no energy. When the wind stops blowing, that's the end of your electric. Let's hurry up. And all of a sudden, they're trying to take you out with okay? Now, Robert Mueller never received a vote, and neither did the person that appointed him. And as you know, the attorney general says, I'm going to recuse myself. And I said, why didn't he tell me that before I put him in? How do you recuse yourself? Robert Mueller put 13 of the angriest Democrats in the history of our country on the commission. What we've done together has never been done in the history, maybe of beyond our country, maybe in the history of the world. They came from the mountains and the valleys and the cities. They came from all over. And what we did in 2016, the election, we call it, with a capital E, it's never been done before, and we're going to do it, I think, again in 2020, and the numbers are going to be even bigger.
All right, that was at least that was a portion of the 2 hours the president spoke at CPAC to rousing applause, and you can understand why. I think, for one thing, having spent so much time in Washington, and I've shared this with you, there's a certain kind of deliberation, and everyone is so articulate, and they never get too excited, and they never get too down, and everything is just measured and articulate. And honestly, I think that the president's off-script, sometimes salty, sometimes, you know, not exact, maybe the wrong word here and there, presentation, but the guts of things being absolutely true and right, the things that no one ever says, I think that's the reason people really appreciate President Trump. And after all, I said to you many times, you have to look at what a man does and not what he says. In Washington, I think there's too much attention paid to how articulate a person is and how cultured and how well-bred and how well he articulates his points, and very little paid to what he actually does. I happen to know a whole lot more people. No, personally, most of the people I know really do things, but I know a lot of people in D.C. that are very articulate and do nothing. They talk a big game, but they do nothing. That's most of them. And so I think many of us are refreshed by a president who, however careless, I was just rereading again Jesus' admonition that whoever is for us is not against us. The president is certainly for the things that we stand for, and that's values and the sanctity of human life. I told you last week or week before last, it's all merging together. By the way, I want to thank Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson for filling in for me last week, because as many of you may know, I actually spoke in my hometown a week ago last Sunday. So I've been out of my studio for probably about 10 days here. And I want to thank them for doing the show for me. I know they both did a great job, and I appreciate it so much. And we're going to talk about the issue of life more fully in just a few minutes. But what I was referring to just now is that private dinner the night before the prayer breakfast, when the president, no cameras, just eyewitnesses who wrote about this, and I don't think it was widely reported, so that's why I'm repeating it. The president marched over to the table where Senator Chris Coons was sitting. Chris Coons was the co-chair of the prayer breakfast. He is a Presbyterian minister. And President Trump just proceeded to say, how in the world you call yourself a Presbyterian minister, you call yourself a Christian, and yet you'd say nothing, you'd do nothing about this issue of a partial, you know, late-term abortion. You say nothing. You do nothing. How can you do that? How can you do that? And from all reports, he made quite a scene. And it wasn't for the cameras. It was out of the passion of his heart. And so for a president like that, however uncareful, however salty, however ill-advised his personal life has been, look at what a man does and not what he says. And as Jesus said, whoever is for us is not against us. And so as long as he's on the right side of these issues, we can forgive and excuse a lot of things and be personally concerned about his life. I think many people have been. I think there have been countless numbers of people who have tried to minister to the president, and I think it's borne its fruit, but I'm not prepared to declare anything beyond that. I want to tell you, let's see, the time that I have left, I'll start this. There was a young man named Hayden Williams who you may have seen in the news about 2 weeks ago at the University of California, Berkeley, was standing at a display and for Turning Point USA, and they had some kinds of, they had flags and red, white, and blue displays, and they also had something there about Jussie Smollett and, of course, hit the lies that he told in Chicago and things about that. And in the process of standing at that table and doing what Turning Point USA does, which is speak against socialism and against free, in favor of free speech and all of those things, Hayden was assaulted by, allegedly, now we think, Zachary Greenberg, who's been arrested by the University of California Police Department. The video is amazing. We'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can see it. But the president actually brought Hayden Williams up on the stage at CPAC on Saturday, and in a second, we're going to replay what the president said about that. I'll come back with that clip, actually, so stay tuned. Hey, it's nice to be back in the studio, and thank you so much for your patience. Let's go. Fasten your seatbelt. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A call to action from American Family Radio.
There's all kind of difficulty in the world, but as the Word of God says, if your brothers in need and you have it within your ability to respond to their need, how can you claim to have love if you allow them to go without? What greater need is there than the need to live? I know life is rough, but it don't have nothing to do with the baby. Don't kill the baby. Don't wait for preborn campaigns. Don't wait for legislation to be passed in your state legislature. Don't wait till Roe versus Wade is overturned. Respond now. I believe with everything in me that we can end this scourge regardless of what they do in the halls of Congress and the halls of the state legislature. Every single family, every single church, go to the local abortion clinics. Let them know that you have people in your churches, people in your family that are willing to take the babies home. They have families that have been dying to take a child home. Don't kill the babies.
Visit AFR.net.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full-time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. There's a war against the colonials, and the bad guys are not the British. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
For as far back as anyone can remember, the Colonial has been the school mascot at George Washington University. But there's an effort underway to change that. Left-wing students and at least one faculty member are leading the charge to banish the Colonial mascot. Critics say the Colonial is offensive, especially to international students. History professor Denver Brunsman wrote a scathing op-ed in the student newspaper. He said the name harkens back to slavery and the conquest of the American Indians. One student leader says the mascot encourages oppression and hatred. In reality, the mascot honors the colonist who gave birth to this great nation. The Colonials managed to stave off the Redcoats, but only time will tell if they can beat back political correctness. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
For years you watched as your leaders apologized for America. You saw that? Would you like to apologize? No, I'm not apologizing. Now you have a president who is standing up for America after decades of building up foreign nations. We are finally building up our nation, and we are doing it with American hands, American grit, and with beautiful, beautiful American steel. We are fighting to ensure that every young American inherits the same blessings and the same boundless opportunity that our ancestors fought to secure with all of their heart, might, and soul. Now more than ever, we need the proud men and women of CPAC. And I want to thank everybody here because it is incredible. Your organization is incredible. Matt and Mercedes, incredible. You're energized. You mobilize and you're engaged.
That was the, yeah, that was another part of the two-hour speech the president made on Saturday. And, you know, remember that when he was in North Korea last week, while he was negotiating at that table across from Kim Jong-un, very serious negotiations, you will recall, won't you, that a year ago, 2 years ago, Kim Jong-un was threatening the world, really, with his rockets, launching them almost every week, laughing, joking, getting ever closer with capabilities, really, many say, of reaching our western shore, Hawaii for sure, and Japan getting nervous, and South Korea being threatened as well. And, of course, the whole world, if we should fall into a nuclear engagement between all the countries that have nuclear weapons, it would have been a disaster. And President Trump got into office and decided to try to solve this unsolvable problem. And at the very least, you have to say that Kim Jong-un has stopped these tests. And we have had a period of peace since with North Korea. However fragile it might be, we have had a period of peace with him. And so while the president was doing this and negotiating all of these very sensitive and important details with the North Korean leader, the House of Representatives chose to parade Michael Cohen, the president's convicted former attorney. He's convicted of lying, not just to everyone, really, the FBI, the Congress on multiple occasions, and he even contradicted himself in testimony. It's really kind of sad to me, to be honest. And that was what the, on the very day the negotiations in North Korea were taking place, they chose to parade Michael Cohen in front of Congress and cover that rather than those negotiations in North Korea. I mean, does that even make sense to any of us as Americans that the press would choose that over what has been tradition, and that is being silent and remaining in support of your president while he's overseas negotiating something like this, certainly not attacking him? What do you think that does to negotiations? I thought about that. The president tweeted something about that early this morning. And I did, whether it's true or not, I don't. Can you imagine? The North Koreans are not stupid. They're watching our press, and if they think our president is being weakened or mocked or in danger of being impeached, you think that makes a difference in a negotiation? Of course it does. Of course it does. How dare they? So Kevin McCarthy was on one of the Sunday shows, and I seldom give him any kind of credit because I'm not a fan. But I have to give him credit for what he said. Let's listen.
The president sitting in Vietnam talking with North Korea. The history has always been in the past with America that politics ends at the water's edge. No, they're having this hearing right then. They're discrediting America, and they dislike this president so much they won't give him an opportunity to try to denuclearize North Korea, that they'd have a hearing on that day. Nobody else in any history would do this to a president when they're overseas, to try to discredit him just because they dislike him and put their dislike ahead of the country.
All right, so good for you, Speaker McCarthy. That goes to your, the one thing in your column to the good for my part. And I mentioned, you know, one of the high points of the speech, the very long speech, was when the president brought Hayden Williams up on the stage with him. Hayden, as I said before the break, was with Turning Point USA. He is really part of Morton Blackwell's training in Washington, D.C. I'm very familiar with that. Many of your campus, I'm very familiar, can't think of the name. Morton Blackwell has a leadership institute. Morton has trained countless young people through the decades, really, into conservative activism. And Hayden comes out of that, but was working with Turning Point USA on the campus of University of California, Berkeley, when Zachary Greenberg, and you can see it in a video, which we'll put on our Facebook page, starts to shout at him and get in his face, and then suddenly, and Zachary's a big guy and he looks well built. He punches Hayden right in the nose, right in the face. Hayden has had concussion-like symptoms, and you know, just the humiliation, and just that's not a good thing, shall we say? There were a lot of other things surrounding that day, but the president brought Hayden up on the stage, and this is what he said.
Today, I'm proud to announce that I will be very soon signing an executive order requiring colleges and universities to support free speech if they want federal research dollars. If they want our dollars and we give it to them by the billions, they've got to allow people like Hayden and many other great young people and old people to speak.
He also said, we reject oppressive speech codes, censorship, political correctness, and every other attempt by the hard left to stop people from challenging ridiculous and dangerous ideas. These ideas are dangerous. Instead, we believe in free speech, including online and including on campus. If they want our dollars and we give it to them by the billions, they've got to allow people like Hayden and many great young people and old people to speak. And God bless President Trump. The crowd started shouting, USA, USA. I think most of us are sick to death of what's happening on college campuses. And if the president can accomplish that with an executive order, if he can stop that and they can start punishing colleges and universities for not allowing the students of varying viewpoints to coexist and not be threatened on campuses, they should not be receiving your tax dollars. I think most of you would agree with that. One thing that happened while I was away from the studio was the vote on the Born Alive Infant Protection Act that took place a week ago today in the Senate. Just a little background here. 77% of voters, according to polls, want Congress to protect babies that are born alive. I think I mentioned, but honestly, I can't remember, so I'm going to repeat, that the whole issue of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, which really came about in, I think, 2002, came honestly out of my radio show. I believe I did share this, but allow me to repeat. That was when I was in Chicago, and I believe it was my first stint in Chicago in the 90s, I think late 90s. I got a call from a pastor, and he said, Sandy, I want to talk to you about something. There's a nurse in my congregation who works at Christ Hospital in Forest Park, and she is observing that they were doing abortions at that hospital during that time. And honestly, that was even unusual. A lot of hospitals would not do that, but this hospital did. Christ Hospital, no less. And so she was observing that some babies were not terminated during abortion. They were born alive. And what the hospital was doing was putting them in closets, in linen closets, and letting them die. They gave them no nourishment. They gave them nothing. They just let them lie there and die, and then disposed of them. And so together, the pastor and I persuaded this nurse to go on my radio show and tell this story. And you can imagine how nervous she was. It was her livelihood, her job. She was well known at the hospital. So she went on anonymously, and she very nervously told the story as carefully as she could. But as the weeks and months progressed, she became a regular on the radio show, and a lot of things unfolded. There began to be protests at the hospital, and soon Jill Stanek identified herself and became an absolute warrior, unleashed on this issue. And yes, she did eventually lose her job, and she decided to work in the pro-life movement full-time, but that's how this whole Born Alive Infant Protection Act began. It was out of this nurse, Jill, calling into my radio show. And so then it spread to the Illinois Capitol in Springfield, and guess what? Well, Senator Barack Obama, who voted present on most every bill, was a warrior against protecting babies born alive. He did everything in his power. He voted twice against it, and he also lobbied every possible way he could to stop this bill. We knew how he felt about that. He also advocated, I could just add as an aside, the most vulgar, inappropriate sexual instruction for preschoolers. He was all about that. And motor voter. Those are his three big accomplishments in the state of Illinois. But the Born Alive Infant Protection Act spread and became national. It was voted on finally, I think, in 2002 in Washington. But the problem was, it didn't really prevent the death of these babies. I think it just declared them as human persons. And so when the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, and the delegate, Kathy Tran, started describing how, you know, it's fine to kill babies, even up to the 9th month, even on the delivery date, it's fine. Just, you know, yes, their bill would cover that, and Ralph Northam had no problem with that. And before that, the state of New York decides they lift all restrictions on abortion, whether it's Anybody can perform, at least doesn't have to be a doctor, to perform the abortions. There are no restrictions for all 9 months, and they're cheering and clapping. And so in the face of all this, the response of the Congress, I tell you, from my point of view, has been pathetic. Could I just say pathetic? But I will say that Mitch McConnell, Ben Sasse, did offer a bill, a Newborn Alive Infant Protection Act, and this particular bill then would actually prevent the killing. Let me just read a little bit to you. A practitioner must exercise the same degree of professional skill, care, and diligence to preserve the life and health of the child as a reasonably diligent and conscientious health care practitioner would render to any other child born alive at the same gestational age. And following the exercise of skill, care, and diligence required under subparagraph A, ensure that the child born alive is immediately transported and admitted to a hospital. Okay, so this bill came up last Monday night in the Senate, offered by Ben Sasse, and you know what happened. You already know what happened. All of the Republicans present, I don't know how many actually bothered to come and vote, but all of them present voted in favor of it, and meanwhile, all of the Democrats voted against it. And I'm going to read their names. I'm going to read their names. Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, because I want you to make a mental note. I really would want you to make a mental note. Don't ever, ever elect these people again. Michael Bennett, Colorado. Richard Blumenthal, Connecticut. Cory Booker, New Jersey. Sherrod Brown, Ohio. Maria Cantwell, Washington. Ben Cardin, Maryland. Tom Carper, Delaware. Chris Coons, the Presbyterian minister, Christian of Delaware. Chris Coons voted against. Catherine Cortez Masto, Nevada. Tammy Duckworth, Illinois. Dick Durbin, Illinois. Dianne Feinstein, California. Kirsten Gillibrand, New York. Kamala Harris, California. Maggie Hassan, New Hampshire. Martin Heinrich, New Mexico. Maisie Hirono, Hawaii. Tim Kaine, Virginia. Angus King, Maine. Amy Klobuchar, Minnesota. Patrick Leahy, Vermont. Ed Markey, Massachusetts. Bob Menendez, New Jersey. Jeff Merkley, Oregon. Chris Murphy, Connecticut. Patty Murray, Washington. Gary Peters, Michigan. Jack Reed, Rhode Island. Jackie Rosen, Nevada. Bernie Sanders, Vermont. Brian Schatz, Hawaii. Chuck Schumer, New York. Jean Shaheen, New Hampshire. Kyrsten Sinema, Arizona. Tina Smith, Minnesota. Debbie Stabenow, Michigan. John Tester, Montana. Tom Udall, New Mexico. Chris Van Hollen, Maryland. Mark Warner, Virginia. Elizabeth Warren, Massachusetts. Sheldon Whitehouse, Rhode Island. And Ron Wyden, Oregon. All right, so all of those Democrats voted against protecting babies born alive. They would rather they be laid in a linen closet and allowed to die and thrown in a trash can. They're just fine with that. Are you hearing me, what we're saying? And on the other side of it, I have to say, and I have said and will say it again, Mitch McConnell should have thrown the full weight of his office, of his power as majority leader in the Senate behind this bill, behind any bill to stop this. Why is it just this, by the way, when New York is removing all restrictions, when they're talking in Virginia proudly about killing babies up to the delivery date, why is there no outrage? Why is there no passion by Mitch McConnell and the leadership of the Senate? I ask you. They talk a good game. When they're running for office, they talk about how pro-life they are. They talk about how bad Planned Parenthood is, but they never defund it. They don't do anything. And this particular vote, Mitch McConnell called for the vote on a Monday evening when it's the bed check vote. That means the ancient senators can't, you know, work more than 2.5 days a week. So they slowly roll into town. And the Monday night vote is just to kind of see who's around. So that's when Mitch McConnell scheduled this vote. Not a serious effort. Not a serious effort. So I think if I were to suggest something right now, it would be make sure none of these Democrats ever get elected again in the states I just mentioned. And Mitch McConnell and the leadership, I hold them to the same standard. And if you want to do something, call Mitch McConnell's office and say, stop this. Put the full force of your influence behind saving these lives and stopping this madness, this infanticide. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
For certain men have crept in unnoticed, ungodly men, who turn the grace of our God into lasciviousness. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. After a long fight, the United Methodist denomination delegates to a special general conference session voted 438-384 to adhere to the scripture's teaching concerning human sexuality. This commitment to biblical orthodoxy is largely attributable to the African delegates to the conference, like Dr. Jerry Kula, a theologian from Liberia, Africa. Curiously, an angered LGBT advocacy group that has fought to move the denomination towards sexual regressivism said the vote advanced the white nationalist strain of Christianity. May the United Methodists remain faithful to the God of the Bible.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper is a morning on-air personality, author, comedian, Christian, and family man. J.J.'s also a keynote speaker at banquets, men's ministry events, pregnancy center fundraisers, and more. Here's what others are saying.
J.J. helped us set a record for the most funds raised at our banquet.
This banquet was our best banquet ever, thanks to J.J. Jasper.
Information on J.J.'s availability to speak at your event is at jjjasper.com.
Does God exist? Is the Bible true? Does truth exist?
When people say there is no truth, I simply ask them this question. Is that true?
Join us this weekend for Cross-Examined with Frank Turek, author of the bestseller, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist.
I actually think it takes more faith not to believe in the truthfulness of the Bible than it does to believe in the Bible.
Cross-Examined with apologist Frank Turek, Saturday morning at 9 Central and Sunday afternoon at 4 Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The American Psychological Association says that biblical masculinity is a form of mental illness. The APA has issued a set of guidelines based on the premise that traditional masculinity is harmful. By traditional masculinity, they mean qualities such as stoicism, the ability to face adversity without collapsing, competitiveness, which is one of the main drivers of career success, dominance and aggression, which are traits that enabled American men to achieve independence, free the slaves, and turn back the Nazi menace. The APA is part of the dark crusade to utterly feminize men. But as I explain in my book for fathers, The Boy to Man book, biblical masculinity means using masculine strength to stand for the truth, protect the weak, and to provide for and lead our families. Maybe it's the people who think this is toxic who are the ones with the mental disorder.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The British government has announced its intention to take an important step in the fight against Iranian-backed terrorism. It's going to stop pretending there's a difference between members of the Iranian proxy militia Hezbollah, who engage in jihad directly, and those who form the organization's so-called political party. This step should end the Hezbollah demonstrations and fundraising operations in London, and quite possibly elsewhere in the European Union as well. That could prove devastating to Hezbollah's financial viability at a moment when its sponsors in Tehran are reeling from the effects of President Trump's economic sanctions. Since Hezbollah's operatives are propping up Maduro's odious regime in Venezuela, engaging in drug trafficking worldwide, threatening Israel, and running sleeper cells in the United States, every American should applaud the UK's initiative and call on the rest of Europe to follow its lead. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Just because someone has a person of color, a black person working for them, does not mean they aren't racist. And it is insensitive that some would even say, the fact that someone would actually use a prop, a black woman, in this chamber, in this committee, is alone racist in itself. Donald Trump is setting
Mr. the precedent. Chairman, I ask that her words Donald be Trump taken down.
It's racist to suggest that I ask her to come in here for that reason.
No, Mr. Chairman, I do not call Mr. Meadows a racist. No. I am trying, as a person of color, Mr. Chairman, just to express myself and how I felt at that moment.
Yes, well, Congresswoman Tlaib, we've heard from her before. She's the, along with Ilhan Omar, she's the first Muslim congresswoman serving. She, of course, has made the news before because she said terribly vulgar things about the President of the United States at a campaign event right after she was sworn into office. Both of these women make no bones about their Islamic bona fides, very proud of them. In that interaction with Mark Meadows during Michael Cohen's hearing last week, you will recall that Tlaib called Mark Meadows a racist. You only heard a, I wish we could have played the whole thing because she laid this whole thing. Mark Meadows had a member, someone who's very close to the Trump family, who's worked with them for years, and she's black. Congressman Meadows had her standing next to him during this hearing when Michael Cohen was accusing President Trump of being a racist. So Tlaib then takes on this diatribe of that she's a prop and it's racist, and then Mark Meadows gets very upset, as you can hear, and demands that she be stopped from saying that, it be stricken from the record, and then she backtracks in the hearing and says, oh, no, I was not calling Congressman Meadows a racist, but of course she was, and she did. And so she was on a subsequent show, I think just this past weekend, and this is what she had to say in retrospect.
Do you regret saying what you said yesterday in the hearing, or do you stand by what you said yesterday in the hearing?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I really do stand by it. And folks need to know, you know, I come from a community that I was raised in, which is the most beautiful, blackest city in the country. And fully around us in what's happening, I think, in the country right now with this sitting president of the United States, very much I wanted to be heard. I wanted to be seen. And for me, at that moment, watching this young woman stand up behind Congressman Meadows in that way was very hurtful, and it was very disrespectful.
What is the bigger lesson here? Because I think one of the things that happens every day in Congress now, the House minority, the Republican Party, is overwhelmingly white and male. I mean, you know, really, you really see it. The majority is a much more diverse coalition of folks from different ethnic backgrounds, different races. It's female representation is higher. And it kind of seems like we're watching these sort of two Americas interact tensely with each other in every single committee hearing.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you, so many of us, I mean, this is the most diverse class, the largest class since Watergate, but I think many of us didn't run to be the first of anything. Many of us, especially the women of color that are there, really ran because they had a desire to do right by their communities and their families that they represent. But also, you know, we didn't come just to make Congress look differently, which I think is important, mm-hmm. but also we, you know, want to speak differently and we want to feel differently. We want people back home to be able to relate to this Congress, to feel like it is a people's Congress and reflective of who we are.
A people's Congress, all right. Yeah, so let me just say a word about that. Rashida Tlaib, first of all, Rashida is not black. She talked about she's trying to make herself a victim like American blacks who have traditionally been a victim for a very different reason. Rashida wants to identify with that and be the victim. The reason why Americans are concerned about Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar is because of Sharia law. It's because we were attacked on 9/11 by Sharia adherents, because Sharia adherents never put country loyalties above Sharia law, because Sharia law is absolutely incompatible with the American Constitution and law. It just is. And they are pledged to jihad. And so, and they've not done anything to assure us that they are not, by the way. And so that's why we're concerned. And on the wings of that, you may have heard that there was quite a dust up in West Virginia. And as a matter of fact, before I even start telling the story, if any of you are from West Virginia and know something about what happened in your state capitol last week in regard to Ilhan Omar, any inside information, give us a call. It's 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Here's the thing. There was some sort of an event called Republicans Take the Rotunda. And one of the at this event, someone held up a poster. Let me see this, if I can find this description of this poster. It was a poster that had a photo, two different frames. One was frame of the attack on the World Trade Center. And the caption above it said, never forget, you said, never forget. And in the bottom, it has a picture of Ilhan Omar in her hijab, and it says, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Oh, nope, that's not what it says. I wanted to get the exact wording. It says something about, it appears we have, or something like that. I'll find it in just a second. I have a lot of pieces of paper here about this. But the idea is that Ilhan Omar is being linked to 9/11 through this picture. And the top frame says, you said, never forget. But evidently, we have. And so you would not believe the uproar. Obviously, the uproar, and of course, the accusation is that it's Islamophobia. Ilhan Omar feels that she's being slighted. She said, no wonder I am on the hit list of a domestic terrorist, and assassinate Ilhan Omar is written on my local gas stations. Now, let me just interject. I don't know if assassinate Ilhan Omar is written on a local gas station. I would not recommend that. I'm not endorsing that. But I also know that Ilhan is so involved with CARE, and they are the masters of victimhood and propaganda. And as I remember, all those fake hate crimes I shared with you, at least some of them, there were pages and pages after Jussie Smollett's incident in Chicago. Many of them, many of them were Muslims complaining about attacks of Islamophobia that were not true. So I hold that with a grain of salt. I like to see pictures of those gas stations where assassinate Ilhan Omar are written. And so she's complaining about this, and they actually got into sort of a battle. Like one of the Republicans, I don't understand this quite because I did not see the report, and that's why I thought maybe some of you were from West Virginia and had some insights into this, it would be helpful. But one of the Democrats got really mad, stormed into the chamber, and injured the doorman who had to go to the hospital. And then there were all these arguments, and basically the Republicans, many of them, I'll just read this. Okay, here's the poster. The upper photo was a picture of the World Trade Center towers during the 9/11 attack. A caption read, never forget, you said. Below it was a photo of Minnesota Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar wearing a hijab. Omar is Muslim and was one of the two Muslim women elected to Congress. The picture's caption said, I am proof you have forgotten. And so this is a typical response of the Republicans, not all of them, but West Virginia State Senate President Mitch Carmichael released a statement. The West Virginia Senate is a body that embraces the goodness of all people and celebrates the unique diversity of those who call this great nation of ours home. We must be strong in our resolve to stand up and speak out against fear and hatred when we see it, and we absolutely condemn the kind of behavior that was on display in our own state capitol. It is hateful and wrong. Above all, it is not representative of the values that the vast majority in West Virginians hold dear. We as a state are far better than what we saw today. So you can see what happened there. I want to counter this with an article written by James Simpson, and it's titled Ilhan Omar, Poster Child for the Red-Green Axis. I don't have time to get through all of this. We will post the entire article on our Facebook page. But let me just read to you. Omar Hilwan is a virulent anti-Semite. But it's much worse than that. In addition to likely criminality, her extreme left positions and connections to terrorists make her a security risk. Some have demanded she be removed from the House Foreign Relations Committee, a position awarded to her by Speaker Nancy Pelosi. But she has no business in Congress at all and should at the very least be investigated for numerous crimes committed over a period of years. She supports the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel, and is overtly anti-Zionist. And, of course, he repeats a tweet that she tweeted in 2012, Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel. During her campaign for Congress, she claimed she was opposed to the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement against Israel, but within days after winning, she publicly stated her support for it. She also claims Israel is an apartheid state. The communist newspaper In These Times defended Omar, reiterating the theme that Israel is an apartheid system built on violent theft of Palestinian land and decades of oppression. And again, it was a communist newspaper that is supporting her. Of course, apartheid, I don't want to go into that right now. That would take me down a track. But I want to talk about Ilhan Omar's is Muslim roots, because I think that's the real issue regarding what happened in West Virginia. I told you that she was going to be doing a Florida fundraiser. She may have already done that. I think it was the end of February for Yusuf Abdallah, or with Yusuf Abdallah, who was has rejoiced at the murder of Jews on his social media posts. The event was sponsored by the Islamic Relief of USA. Quinn Hillier reports, and I have read to you before, that it has been branded a terrorist financier by governments of the United Arab Emirates and Israel, and that Russian authorities, the Swiss bank UBS, the British bank HSBC, and reports by governmental entities in Germany and Sweden all determined that Islamic Relief has supported radical Islamic organizations such as the Muslim Brotherhood. In another month, Omar is going to speak at another Florida fundraiser sponsored by the Council on American Islamic Relations. CARE is a Muslim Brotherhood group fronting for the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas in the United States. It's an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation terror financing trial. And that came about right after 9/11. They found the guts of the Muslim Brotherhood's plan to destroy this country. In fact, the phrase from this document was to destroy their miserable house from within and how they would infiltrate. Of course, Ilhan is very connected to this organization. CARE founder Nihad Awad led the student branch of the Communist Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, in America before switching to Hamas in 1994. And I could go on and on. We will put this on our Facebook page. And so when people in West Virginia say something to the effect that we didn't learn our lesson, that I'm proof you have forgotten, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that. I think we can. It's not just speculation with Ilhan Omar. There are direct connections. There's also direct connections with Andre Carson of Indiana, who's Muslim. The Muslims that are serving in our, and we've already seen Rashida Tlaib. We know there were numbers of people at her swearing-in ceremony who are, I can't give their name, their names are difficult, as you well know. There was a whole list, and especially one that appeared with her, who has terrible connections. They hang out with really bad people who actually have been supporting terrorism and are quite vocal about their anti-Semitism. So I don't know how we're going to sort this out. I really don't. The Republican Party went weak on that during the George Bush administration, George W. Bush, and I'm not sure how we're going to back out of this. That was a battle. I haven't been in that battle in a while, but that was a battle we did on Capitol Hill for so long, trying to get the Republicans to understand that they had let the camel's nose under the tent, and they just wouldn't hear of it. People that you respect, people whose names I could call, who we tried to talk to and explain to them what the Muslim Brotherhood was up to. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. They knew person X, Y, or Z, and they were nice people, and how dare we say bad things about them. Didn't matter what kind of information we had about their past or their connections. And so we have a problem, Houston. We have a problem, and we've had it for quite a long time. And now we have a problem in our Congress. And, of course, as we said, Ilhan Omar sits on the Intelligence Committee in the House, and that's very dangerous. That's why the President of the United States has said she should be out of Congress. She shouldn't be on that committee. But Nancy Pelosi appointed her to that committee. And I think on the recent edition of Rolling Stone magazine, Nancy Pelosi is posing with Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's the Happy Four, I think. I haven't seen the picture, but that's what I hear. So we have our work cut out for us, don't we? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.